athletic competition. It can easily be broken down into two parts: the minutes or hours it takes to complete the event. Then weeks, months, and years of joy or heartbreak. Finally, the decades to analyze and debate it. From the press box to press row, Donald Ware will break it all down for you with an in-depth look at historically black college athletics, as well as the biggest news stories and newsmakers of the day. It's time to talk the talk with those who walk the walk. From the press box to press row, here's your host, Donald Ware.
It's a Father's Day edition of Box to Row. Happy Father's Day to all of the fathers out there. We got a lot to get to. As a matter of fact, as we've done for the last several years, my father, Donald Ware, going to join us today on the program. He played his collegiate football at Howard University. He's a Howard Hall of Famer. And may be one of the only people still living to have had a personal encounter with the legendary Vince Lombardi. Going to ask him about that today right here on the program. Look, you got to help me understand. You got to help me understand this. And is there really any surprise as to what the Boston Celtics have done? Like, I've been saying this for like the last 3 weeks prior to the NBA Finals. I thought that Boston was the better team, that Boston would win the series. And even more specifically, that I thought Boston could win this series without Kristaps Porzingis. Now, that came to full fruition, okay, in the last couple of, in particularly on Wednesday. And right, okay, look, he played the first couple of games, right? And he had an impact, especially in the first game. He had the 18 big and significant points in the first half, finished the game with 20 points, but it wasn't even all about the points. It was some of the other things that we've talked about. I talked about last week in terms of Kristaps Porzingis and how he's been playing and how he was with the Knicks. And when I had a chance to see him play when he was with the Wizards a couple of years ago against the LA Lakers. And he's all that. But let's not try to act like, and I think what I was, you know, all of the talk was when he got injured in game two and then he was out for game three. All of the talk was about how the Celtic, now the, you know, Kyrie would be able to have his way inside and so would Luka, and it cleared the lane open and all of those things. Now, help me remember, but I'm pretty sure in game one, Porzingis didn't start the game. And it's not like he played a lot, but it wasn't like he played played 40 minutes in a game. And so it's like, okay, yes, he altered some shots. He had, what, maybe three or four block shots in that first game. He definitely was a presence. I just felt like a little bit, and it's interesting because remember last week I was singing the praises of Porzingis, particularly after game one. But I also recognized that at the very beginning, before this series even started, whether or not Porzingis played, the Celtics were still going to win the series, in my opinion. Now, of course, Porzingis playing made it that much more of the fact that the Celtics would win the series. And when he went down and did not play in game three, I said it's still not going to be a problem. And look, you knew Dallas was going to make an adjustment. Not only make the adjustments, but Dallas was at home. So you knew it was going to be a different environment. Things were going to be different, and Dallas got out to the really fast start. but the Celtics maintained their presence and really only trailed by 1 point at halftime. Matter of fact, had a couple of leads, but only trailed by 1 point at halftime. And look, I'm going to give Joe Mazzulla a lot of credit because we don't talk about Joe Mazzulla enough as a coach. He makes the adjustments. He knows what to say to the players. And I'm going to give Joe Mazzulla a lot of credit for what the Celtics have done. Okay. Porzingis aside, you know, again, all of the talk was about Porzingis, and I want to get back to that. Porzingis not going to be, Dallas is going to have a field day, yada, yada, yada. And I'll ask this question again. Did you see the Celtics play this year? And if you did, then you would have known that the Celtics were the better team from top to bottom. The Celtics are like 8 or 9 deep. You can pit the starting five. And I said this also, if you remember, if you listened to this program, I said that it's not going to be about Kyrie and Luka versus Jalen and Jason. That's not what it was going to come down to. It was going to come down to what some of the other players were able to do. Now, okay, game 3, maybe it did. And look, Jason Tatum, really good in the first half. Jaylen Brown, really good in the second half. They were a tandem. We get to Thursday and all of the talk. See, this is the thing that kind of I was kind of perturbed by, especially once the Celtics won the series. The talk on Thursday, all of the talk was what Luka didn't do. Luka fouled out of the game. I thought that was really, really big. Because remember, in that third quarter, the Celtics went on that major run. And as a matter of fact, to start the fourth quarter, the Celtics were up, I think it was 15 points, and then hit the first two baskets of the fourth quarter, three-pointers, to go up 21 points. So the Celtics were up 21 points. And give Dallas credit. Dallas came all the way back to cut it to 2. Now, again, as I've said for many, many weeks now, we've seen where the Celtics would have these big leads throughout the course of the season, even sometimes in the playoffs. And maybe they weren't playing the team the caliber or a team the caliber of the Mavericks. I get it. But we've seen this before from the Celtics. They'd have these big leads. Teams would roar back. But what we've seen from the Celtics in the playoffs, opposed to what we saw in the regular season, is this. We saw it in some of these early series with the Celtics. Big leads, teams would come back, but then the Celtics would go ahead to those wins, unlike maybe what we saw in the regular season. The Atlanta Hawks in March comes to mind most immediately. So Luka fouling out was huge, no doubt about it. But I never had a doubt in my mind that the Celtics would figure it out. And that's where it comes down to Mazzulla making those adjustments, calling the timeouts at the right time, talking to the players. The players are going to play. The players are going to make the plays. But it's what the coach sees sometimes that and the timeout calls at the right time that can certainly lead and I think led the Celtics back to get back on point. Now, again, Luka fouling out I think was huge. You know, a lot was made of him fouling out of the games. And look, we can talk all about Luka all we want. I mean, and I was like that too in terms of like he's such a good player, but he cries so much. Like he doesn't get a foul call, he cries all the time, right? But sometimes for me, he's such a good player that I just go not shaking my head because I'm not rooting for either team. But I'm like, man, this guy is absolutely incredible. Some of the shots that he makes, like he's not a great shooter, but he makes shots and he makes big shots and he makes these step back three pointers that are, you go, really? And you're not a great shooter, but the difficulty in some of these shots that he makes, and he's still able to make them as not a great shooter. And then, of course, he's got all the up and unders. He's just a very and a superbly skilled player. No doubt about it. Okay? But Luka crying about the calls, because again, for me, you can talk about Luka all you want. At the end of the day, it was in part, and Kyrie definitely stepped up, didn't play well in games one or two, but definitely stepped up in game three. But had it not been for Luka, the Mavericks would not have even been in that position anyway in that game, let alone to where the Mavericks have gotten to. Let's stop talking about what Luka didn't do or what the Mavericks didn't do, or in the first two games, what Kyrie didn't do, or what maybe PJ Washington or Gafford didn't do. Because remember, those were key players and really helped to get the Mavs to where they are. But this is their first time in the finals, and they were on bad teams. Washington on the Hornets and Gafford on the Wizards, two of the worst teams in the league. So you're talking about going from that to making an impact and then getting to the finals. That's another level. These guys have never been to the finals before. So you had to figure that there was going to be a little bit of a fall off. And that's why I said, and look, the Celtics had been here before. All of the Celtics had been here before. All of them. Drew Holiday with a different team. And again, Drew Holiday, had it not been for him, along with PJ Tucker, the Bucks would not have won that championship that the Bucks won back in 2021. So look, let's stop talking about Luka, and let's stop talking about how bad the Mavs played, and let's start talking about how good the Celtics were, and give the Celtics all of the credit that the Celtics deserve. So we're going to talk more about that here on the program. Again, my father, Donald Ware, going to join us a little bit later on in the program. Also, want to talk about the passing of the legendary Jerry West. And we're going to talk about Dan Hurley turning down the Lakers job. Look in your eyes, and I see the reflection of me. My little guy, thank the Lord for blessing me with a seed. Before he died, my father taught these lessons to me. And before I die, I share the same lessons that he was stressing to me.
Hey there, fellow travelers. It's me, the Hotel Wiz. Before you go anywhere, call me day or night for hotel rates too low to publish. I'll save you up to 75% on over 500,000 hotels across the globe. You see, I've already done the research, so you don't have to spend time online trying to find the best deal. That's up to 75% off. Just call me, the Hotel Wiz. It's a free call, and you get instant access to rates too low to publish with no cancellation fees.
Make a free call now and save up to 75% off your hotel rooms the next time you're going somewhere for business or pleasure. Call the Hotel Wiz now and get instant access to rates too low to publish. 800-811-3471. 800-811-3471. 800-811-3471. Call the Hotel Wiz right now for rates too low to publish at 800-811-3471.
On last week's From the Press Box to Press Row with Donald Ware.
I believe it's about the other players. One, I said I thought the Celtics would win the series. Two, I believe the Celtics are the better team even without Kristaps Porzingis. Now, Porzingis was tremendous. And I heard a lot of people talking about whether Porzingis would be able to come back, what kind of impact that he would have. Look, I've watched Porzingis play throughout the course of his career. The only question mark during his time with the Knicks was, could he stay healthy?
From the Press Box to Press Row is one of the hottest sports talk shows in the country. Join Donald each week as he takes you on a journey through the world of HBCU sports and pro sports, and interviews with top sports and entertainment figures. That's From the Press Box to Press Row each week on your favorite station.
You're listening to From the Press Box to Press Row.
From the Press Box to Press Row.
Box to
Box
row.
To Box to Row.
Box to Row.
The umbilical cord. 1157, a soldier is born, and he's flesh of my flesh, young Harlem Quran.
I hope you grew up to become that everything you can be. That's all I wanted for you, young and like father, like son.
It's a Father's Day weekend edition of the program. Still to come here on Box to Row, my father, Donald Ware, will join us as we've done for the last, I don't know, six years or so. So Jerry West, the great Jerry West, the logo of the NBA, passed away on Wednesday at the age of 86. And I, you know, wasn't old enough. As a matter of fact, Jerry West's last game as a player was before I was even born. He played 14 years in the league. And if I could just read off a couple of stats to you, because even though I didn't have a chance to see Jerry West play, I love history, love looking at old clips, just sort of observing history. Now, he only won one championship, and a lot of that had to do with the Celtics. The Celtics were great, just like Wilt Chamberlain. Wilt Chamberlain only won two championships in all of the time that he played. Certainly one of the greatest players to ever play. So let me just read a couple of stats off to you. 14 seasons in the league, was the NBA Finals MVP in 1969. Okay, the Lakers lost the championship that year to the Celtics. Still was named the MVP. That has never happened. That probably will never happen. I think the closest we've ever come to something like that happening in terms of a player from a losing team winning the most valuable player award in the NBA Finals may have been in 2015 when Golden State beat Cleveland. And, you know, there was some consideration given to LeBron James. We'll probably never see that, okay? 14-time NBA All-Star. He played 14 seasons, made the All-Star team every year, was the NBA All-Star Game MVP in 1972. 10 times he was first team All-NBA. 10 times he was first team All-NBA. And one of the things I didn't know, he was four-time NBA All-Defensive first team. Four times. Okay, so it was a great defender. Okay. You look at what he was able to do. By the way, his career average, 27 points per game. He, in his last season, his 14th and final season, he averaged in excess of 20 points per game in his final season. Look at all of the great players that have ever played this game and tell me how many have averaged in excess of 20 points. But not only that, he shot 45% from the field in his final season. Okay, that was Jerry West, the player. Obviously, the numbers and all of the accolades speak for themselves. Hey, one championship is better than zero championships, and he's got one championship to his name. But let's also talk about Jerry West, the general manager, okay? Started his career as the coach of the Lakers, right? He was a coach of the Lakers from 76 to 79, then became the general manager, was responsible for all of the success that the Lakers had for many, many years, all right? Many, many years, not just in the beginning with Magic Johnson and, you know, of course, Kareem and, you know, all of the, you know, James Worthy was a number one pick out of North Carolina, you know, Byron Scott and Michael Cooper. And then after Kareem, it was Michael Thompson. And I mean, really the list kind of goes on and on, right? Again, all of those years as with the Laker organization. And not only that, but also helped to construct the Lakers with Kobe Bryant and Shaquille O'Neal. Okay, so let's talk about that. But then, not only that, okay, that was that, comes back, had a role in what we see now currently with Golden State, had a role in that. Also, the Memphis Grizzlies. He also had he was huge with the Memphis Grizzlies. I mean, helped the Grizzlies to really become relevant. And, you know, we're talking about at a time when, of course, Memphis and back in 2002. And then look, this is the thing about it. Like, he went old school, right? Like, bringing Hubie Brown in as the head coach, right? Hubie Brown, who still does broadcasts of NBA games. You know, he had been a former coach, was a really, really good coach back in the day, was up in age. I don't know, maybe was Hubie Brown like maybe in his, 60s, maybe mid-60s when he brought him back? You talk about Memphis was extremely relevant, was still extremely relevant. You know, let's also talk about, you know, his time with Golden State and really helping to construct that organization. Even with the Clippers, he was also with the Clippers. So he was with the Clippers more recently here. And right in the Clippers have had, they haven't won a championship, but they've, you know, been able to put together some teams and have had some success. Everything Jerry West touched turned to gold. Not even mentioning his days as a college basketball player at West Virginia, playing in the national championship game, and then part of the 1960 U.S. Olympic team that won gold. He played in a time when you're talking about the 60s with, you know, Oscar Robertson and, Earl the Pearl Monroe, latter 60s into the 70s, some of those really, really good times in basketball. And you had sort of the ABA trying to make its run. And then, time he got out of the game, you shortly thereafter had the merger with the NBA and the ABA, and then it's what, you know, then of course Magic and Bird along with Dr. J really saved the NBA. All things I've read, I was very young when Bird and Magic came into the league along with an established Dr. J, and then Michael Jordan took it to new heights. And as a matter of fact, Michael Jordan really, I would say, laid the foundation in terms of where the NBA is now. Okay, there was no one bigger to that point than Michael Jordan. Of course, LeBron James has come along and has been huge for the game of basketball, no doubt about it. When I think back to those days, and that was with I don't remember. He may have never played in Minneapolis. He may have always played in Los Angeles, because remember the Lakers had some success with George Mikan going back to the late 50s. And then, of course, the Lakers were relevant but could never get over the hump. Even when the Lakers had it one time, it was West, Baylor, and Chamberlain. And then, of course, in 72, West and Chamberlain ultimately won the NBA championship. What a career that Jerry West had, very well respected. Anybody that talked about Jerry West, you've seen all the interviews with Magic and Shaq. And, I mean, just a tremendous, tremendous not only player, but executives in the Hall of Fame. I think in the Pro Basketball Hall of Fame three times over, if I'm not mistaken. Jerry West, one of the greatest basketball minds of all time. We salute Jerry West, of course, passing away on Wednesday at the age of 86. Speaking of the Lakers, more Lakers news. So Dan Hurley opted not to take the job as the Lakers head coach. And I think the offer If I remember off the top of my head, 6 years, seven. He turns down 6 years, $70 million. Like, I got to be honest with you. And again, you know, look, we talked about it last week. Coach K turned down the Lakers also going back some, what now, 20 years ago now? So maybe, I don't know, maybe not the right time for Dan Hurley. He, as I mentioned last week, from my understanding, he's expressed interest in terms of being a head coach at the NBA level. And boy, I tell you what, I you know, people can say the college game is greater for it. I you know, again, to me, I still watch the college game. I've always been a pro guy, more of an NBA guy. To me, and he's, and really Dan Hurley is one of the few that currently and probably more so in the future, I don't know if circumvent is the right word, but when you're talking about the whole NIL deal and the transfer portal, hadn't affected him in the last couple of years per se. And he's got a team coming back that I think maybe the Huskies may be the favorites to three-peat as champions. So maybe the allure of that, maybe it just wasn't the right time. Obviously, he's going, some things are going to have to be different for him, from him, maybe with respect to his personality, the way he coaches players. There's a vast difference between playing, you're coaching college kids. They're more apt to listen to you. In the NBA, I mean, yeah, you're coaching guys, but it's different. And guys are making a ton of money, right? They're professional players. This is all they do is play ball. And there's a lot more scrutiny, a lot more pressure, all of those things that come with it. Maybe it just wasn't the right time for Dan Hurley, but boy, he walks away from almost $12 million. But I think there will be another opportunity. And look, if he continues to have the success that I'm sure he's going to continue to have as the head coach of UConn, then there will certainly be other opportunities for him in the NBA. Up next here on this Father's Day edition, the weekend edition of Box to Row, going to talk with my father, Donald Ware.
You're listening to From the Press Box to Press Row.
Here with Stephen Curry, your progress from Davidson to now with Golden State.
Where I've come from in high school into a small D1 college at Davidson, and it's a great story, and I'm just having fun, you know, living my dream and riding the ride.
Main event! Jey Uso joining us here. Could there be a possible return to the bloodline?
For me?
Yes. At some point.
I'm gone, D. Hey, I threw the deuces up before. I'll do it again, man.
Come on, main event. That's family, man. I mean, I'm not talking about now. I get it. But down the line, like, come on.
Hey, D, you see how they be treating me, man? Come on, man. That something. It be your own family sometimes be doing you wrong, Lou. I gotta go, man. Hey, I'm doing all right by myself.
She's Simone Biles.
Actually, really fun. Like, to be honest, had a lot of fun. We were like, oh, of course, like, we're in the best shape of our life. We're feeling confident about our body, and we hope that other young girls and women, like, feel that being strong is still beautiful.
The one and only Michael Strahan, and cannot have you on without talking about Texas Southern. Cannot. So how did you ultimately end up at Texas Southern?
Yeah, from Houston. Grew up in Germany. When I was a senior in high school, my dad said, I'm going to send you to stay with your uncle in Houston and get a football scholarship. So I went to Houston. I played at Westbury High School for 1 year. Texas Southern was probably the only school that saw me play, being right there in Houston and being a local boy. And Coach Walter Highsmith, I went over to see him, and he offered me a scholarship. It was perfect for me, man, to go to the HBCU, to go to Texas Southern. The size of the school, the education they gave me, not just in the classroom, but about life. I would have been swallowed up at another school. I wouldn't have felt as if I really could have made a difference or had a real purpose of being there. But at Texas Southern, I always felt like I could make a difference and I had a purpose.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Skylar Diggins of the WNBA. Thank you for having me. I'm excited. You know, just been able to work a lot on my body and my shape, and a lot of things that I feel like I needed to work on in the offseason. I was able to get that done, and, you know, it's showing.
Snoop Dogg is on the mic. Pay attention.
I appreciate the love that I get, and I appreciate the sport of hip hop, and it's given me back that same love in return, you know, for the amount of years that I've been doing it. I've always went into it with the same, you know, spirit of I make music for the people. I make it go for them, and I always make them a part of it. I never separated myself and tried to be a star. I've always wanted to be one of the people that you can look to as somebody that was, you know, like your uncle because of the way that I treat people. And I feel like my career is representative of that. That's why the longevity is there. That's why the love is there. And that's why I maintain the status of, you know, being relevant for so many years.
I'm talking about none other than Serena Williams.
That was definitely one of the better matches I've ever played. I've had it just like that. You know, I was really focused, just really, you know, excited.
Demetrius Flannery, a.k.a. Lil Meech.
He sent in Atlanta, told me that he was going to move me from my hometown, Miami, to L.A., put me in acting classes, and I had to go 5 days a week, 2 times a day. Only had about a year and a half, but once I started, I didn't want to stop, you know, so once in a lifetime opportunity. I didn't want to watch somebody else, you know, get the role of playing my father and me having to watch him on TV. Opportunity passed me by, so I just buckled down and focused, man. Put everything to the side, made sure that my number one thing that I wanted to do was focus on being the best possible actor I can be for the show. And that's how it happened.
That is the voice of Kevin Durant.
Oh, yeah, well, I'm just, you know, trying to get better every single day. We've been through a lot as a team, and I enjoy playing with a great group of guys. So, you know, I'm just trying to enjoy every moment of it.
That is the voice of Common. You went to Florida A&M.
Oh, FAMU days were some of the best days of my life. I mean, I had so much fun there. It was, like, invigorating. It was an introduction to a new aspect of culture in the world. I mean, the Southern girls is just incredible. you know, the food was great. The black college experience, you can't beat that.
Kyrie Irving.
Playing at Duke for Coach K, what was that like and how that prepared you for the league now?
Playing 11 games, you know, a lot of people think that's not a, you know, big package for you to become a better player. But for me, it was. Playing for Coach K, he gave me the keys to the car, and I was driving it in first 8 games. And, you know, being a part of something special like that and having a brotherhood built at an institution such as that one is an experience that you never forget.
Ice Cube has been our guest.
Hey, man, thanks for letting me talk a little music, movies, and sports. Hey, my favorite three topics.
Hey, y'all. It is the EST of WWE, the strongest, the fastest, the roughest, the toughest, the quickest, the greatest, the best on Box to Row. Tune in if you want to catch the best BEST interview ever.
From the Press Box to Press Row is the sports talk show that is the voice and the talk of HBCU sports with a flair for pro sports talk and entertainment. Check the show out online at BoxToRow.com.
That's Box to Row, real, relevant radio. Welcome back to Box to Row. You can participate here on the conversation. Hit me up via Twitter or X, as it were, at Box to Row, B-O-X. T-O-R-O-W. In the last segment, talking a little bit about the Boston Celtics and where that series stands now. And I know a lot of the talk was about Luka, but look, give the Celtics credit. The Celtics have been playing, have played really well. Well, of course, it's Father's Day weekend. And as we've done here for the past several years, we're going to say hello to my father, Donald Ware, and talk with him a little bit. Of course, he plays a Howard University Athletic Hall of Famer, played at Howard, had a tryout with the then Washington Redskins, officiated in the CIAA, still maintains a relationship as far as officials officiating is concerned with the CIAA that is going on 40 years now as he joins us here on the program. Dad, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing? Thank you for having me on your show. And yes, Father's Day, and I always look forward to it. I think we've done this about 6 or 7 years, and I always look forward to it. And it's a nice gesture on your part to include me you know, in your program.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, you've done a lot, not only for me, for us, but just, I mean, you talk about your days at Howard University. But, you know, really, I want to start here. Jerry West passed, you know, he passed away on Wednesday. He's the logo. I'm sure you've, you know, had a chance at some point kind of growing up or otherwise to see him play. Certainly, he did a lot as a general manager. Just, you know, any reflections you may have on Jerry West?
Well, first of all, I was very sad to hear of his passing. I know that he played collegiately at University of West Virginia. He was one of my all-time favorites, along with Wilt Chamberlain and Elgin Baylor, and certainly Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, and of course, Shaq. I think he was an outstanding player. And I know that he won some championships with the Lakers. And I just we're very sad to hear his passing.
The other voice of my father joins us here on Box to Roll Father's Day edition weekend of the program. So as I mentioned in the open, you're going on now 40 years with the CIAA in terms of officiating. Yes, you've retired in terms of being on the field, but you still do some neutral observing, etc. Did you foresee that you'd be doing, you know, officiating and with the CIAA for 40 years when you started this?
No. I spent 31 years on the field, and the last 9 years I was a neutral observer, which I enjoyed the officiating. I enjoyed neutral observing, but I think after 40 years, you get tired of the travel, and that was a big issue. One of the big issues I came off the field after 31 years, I just got tired of the travel. I enjoy going to Bowie State because that's right in the area, in Virginia Union and Virginia State. But I didn't like the overnight, travel. It kept you away from home and so forth. You had to pack and had to wear a suit and all that. And I just didn't really enjoy the travel. But I did enjoy my fellow officials that I certainly officiated with.
Yeah, no, definitely understood. Of course, culminating with that officiating that Division II National Championship game in 2004. Again, Father's Day edition of Box to Roll. My father, Donald Ware, joins us. Last two thoughts before I ask you about your time with the then Washington Redskins. You played at Howard, basically a four-year starter, Howard Hall of Famer. What does it mean? What does it mean to be, because you had to be pretty good to be in the Howard Athletics Hall of Fame. So what does it mean to you to be a Hall of Famer?
Well, it's certainly a great honor, but that honor is not alone. I played with some very good players. I had some very good coaches, and I think I was able to trick some of the officials in not calling a pass interference. But I think it's the players that I played with, were instrumental in me achieving the goals that I did. And certainly I wasn't necessarily a four-year starter. I would say I was a 3.5-year starter because I didn't play the first 3 or 4 games. I complained to the coach at I think for Delaware State. They put me in the game. I intercepted a pass, ran 62 yards. And at that moment, I think it was the third game of my freshman year, I never came off the field. I guess it's a stroke of luck that I was able to intercept that pass. And in my years at Howard, I intercepted 24 passes in the 3.5 years that I was actually a starter. But it was a great honor to be in the Hall of Fame, and it wasn't me alone. There were some players I played with, the coaches. And I must add this, too. This may not have anything to do with the Hall of Fame, but I coached at Howard for 3 years, and I had some very good players that I played with and coached who went on to play professional football. I won't attempt to name them because I know I'm going to leave someone out.
Right.
But I, me achieving the CIAA honors was a group effort and not my ability in itself.
Yeah, 24 interceptions in a career is certainly a lot. Last thought. Again, you had the opportunity to try out with the then Washington Redskins. Tell the story about how your interaction with the great and legendary Vince Lombardi.
Well, first of all, let me say this, that we had a game in Atlanta against Morehouse, and we, after the game, we were in the airport coming back to Washington, D.C., and we saw Bobby Mitchell, you know, in the airport, and I found out later that he was down there to scout me. He was Bobby Mitchell was a scout for the Redskins at that time. And he was, I found out he was scouting me, and because I received a phone call from the Washington Redskins office in February, I believe it was February the 1st or the, or January the 31st, about signing as a free agent. So I went to the Redskins office on February the 3rd and signed a professional contract. I had a 9 o'clock appointment. So I went to the office, which was at that time, Connecticut and L Streets Northwest. And so I went to the office and I saw the receptionist and I said to her that I was Donald Ware. I was here for a 9 o'clock appointment with Coach Lombardi. So she rang him up and she told me to sit down and that he would be with me in a moment. So the phone rang again and she told me to walk straight ahead to his office. And as I walked towards his office, it was like I was walking on a cloud. I was that nervous to, number one, to meet him and also to certainly sign the NFL contract. So I, as I approached the door and I knocked on the door opened and the door was opened by Charlie Taylor. And I didn't have any idea why he was there, but I saw Bobby Mitchell sitting in one of the guest chairs in front of Coach Lombardi's desk. And I noticed Lombardi, Coach Lombardi was writing something and with some papers in front of him and so forth and so on. So Bobby nodded me to sit down in the other guest chair beside him. And I noticed Charlie Taylor was over at the coffee, I guess getting a cup of coffee, but I still didn't know why he was there. So Lombardi, Coach Lombardi finished what he was doing and he said to me that we were interested, the Washington Redskins are interested in signing me as a free agent, and he understood that I, played safety, but he was interested in me playing cornerback, and he asked me how did I feel about that. Well, I just felt I didn't have the speed to be a cornerback. I was just a real safety, so I certainly wasn't going to say to him, well, no, I don't want to play corner. I want to play safety. And he was offering me that opportunity. So I said yes. And so the next question he asked me was, do you, playing corner, do you think you can check Charlie Taylor? And Charlie Taylor's standing there, getting a cup of coffee. And I noticed when Lombardi asked me that question, Charlie appeared to be tingling the spoon up against the cup. So I became a little more nervous, but I really didn't know how to respond to that particular question. Can you check Charlie Taylor? And he's standing right there. And I know Charlie Taylor is one of the best wide receivers of all time. And certainly during that time he was with the Washington Redskins, he was tops. So I thought a moment, how I'm going to get out of this. And Charlie's standing there, Vince Lombardi's looking at me, and Bobby in the other guest chair was squirming in the seat, hoping that I would respond, correctly. So I thought about it, and I looked Lombardi in the eye, and I said to him, no one can. And he smiled, and he pushed his long legal blue paper in front of me, which was my NFL contract. And I guess from that action of his, that I made the right response, saying that no one could. So I guess that got me out of hot water. Charlie stopped banging the spoon against the cup, and Bobby seemed to be relieved as Lombardi pushed the contract in front of me. And I noticed that the contract, long legal blue paper, was for the amount of $12,500. The incoming rookies at that time, free agents, were making $12,000. But I think because I'm from the area of Washington, D.C., I could draw people in, and maybe that was a $500 bonus. So I signed the contract, and we talked a couple more minutes, and I left, and I was invited to the a June mini camp at Georgetown University.
Absolutely tremendous story. As a matter of fact, that is 54 years ago this month that happened. Again, it's a Father's Day edition of Box to Row. I'm your host, Donald Ware, talking with my father, Donald Ware. Dad, I really appreciate this. Enjoy doing this each and every year, and I look forward to really talking with you and seeing you real soon.
Well, it's my pleasure, and I again thank you very much for having me, you know, on your program. I always look forward to each year, and hopefully, we can have many more conversations for Father's Day.
We'll be back.
More of Box to Row with Donald Ware is on the way. BoxToRow.com is the website for all of your HBCU sports needs.
From the game of the week feature to interviews
to the latest news in the world of HBCU sports, BoxToRow.com has you covered.
Missed a week of From the Press Box to Press Row?
BoxToRow.com has all the archive shows. Don't forget to check out the All-American teams and weekly media coaches bowls.
From the Press Box to Press Row
and BoxToRow.com, your HBCU sports leader.
It's Donald Ware from the Press Box to Press Row.
Welcome back to Box to Row. You can participate here on the conversation. Hit me up via X at Box to Row, BoxToRow on Facebook, BOX2ROW, and on Instagram. And follow us on all of our social media on Instagram, also at Box to Row, BoxToRow. And visit us on our YouTube page and subscribe, as a matter of fact, to the Box to Row YouTube page. One last thought on Luka before we move on. And again, a fantastic player, definitely top five. Did he finish second? I believe it was second in the MVP voting, and rightfully so. I mean, he's just, and I thought he should have gotten more credit even last year than he got. But in terms of always railing against the officials for every, and look, in the NBA, when you look at the sort of the culture, really, of the NBA and throughout where we are, the times we're in. It's like every single, almost everything is complained about. And then the other thing is, half the time is especially if somebody commits a foul, they never did it. You know, even though replay clearly shows that they did. Now, I don't know if that's because they're so caught up in the moment they didn't think they did it, when it's obvious when replay comes out that they did. That's sort of what permeates throughout the NBA. I just think my thought is Luka needs to tone it down. There are going to be some calls that are going to be missed. And look, even that sixth personal foul on Wednesday in game three, the referee, if you saw the call, the referee looked right at him, and it was in the referee's mind definitive. Now, when you look at the replay, I thought it was a defensive foul call. I don't think Luka had clear position established. I also think that Brown may have pushed off a bit on using that off arm to push off just a bit. Either way, it was a definitive call. It was reviewed, by the way, and I'm not, listen, I'm not a proponent of replay in any sport for a number of different reasons, one of which sometimes you still don't get it right, even though you have replay. That said, I think you're talking about Luka next year, you know, just tone it down a bit. Just tone it down a bit. Referees are going to miss some calls. You know, you need to get back in the graces, I think, of the officials. A phenomenal player, and I think if he does that, look, Dallas's team basically is coming back for next year. So, you know, I just think he needs to tone it down a little bit. We've got, of course, for our listeners in Jacksonville on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM, Trevor Lawrence and the Jaguars agreed to a 5-year, $275 million extension for Trevor Lawrence. $55 million a year, $200 million of those dollars guaranteed. I think when you look at Jacksonville, it's on the rise. I mean, you know, that year with Urban Meyer was an absolute disaster. And I remember talking about that year in the Jaguars. I really felt bad for the Jaguars. As a matter of fact, it wasn't a weekly deal, but boy, we would talk about the Jaguars a whole lot and just how bad the Jaguars were. Well, you've got your franchise quarterback. He's what, getting Joe Burrow money? It's equivalent to what Joe Burrow is getting. And Joe Burrow is a lot more established, although Burrow was injured on last year. So we'll see. I think, you know, Jacksonville, I'm not going to say the Jaguars took a bit of a step backwards last year. It's a tough, you know, AFC's tough, even though it wasn't as tough last year as it was in 2022. But good move, I think. I'd like to hear from Jaguar fans your thoughts. And, I mean, look, you've got your franchise quarterback. A lot of organizations would like to have a quarterback like Lawrence, and I think you pay him now for what he's going to do for you. So, I think it's a really good move. Would love to hear from Jaguars fans, of course, at BoxToRow, BoxToRow. Listen, Father's Day weekend, right? So us as fathers, probably, I would think anyway, you know, our families are going to take us out maybe for dinner or whatever the case, breakfast, whatever it may be. And I was thinking, right, like, you know, I'm when it comes to going to restaurants, and by the way, I would say this, that's something like for Mother's Day, we used to do quite a bit, especially early on, right? But, you know, on Mother's Day, and I would assume Father's Day is similar, restaurants are so busy. You know, you probably can't make a lot of reservations at various restaurants. And so what we started doing is just really cooking out for my wife. Like for Mother's Day, we'd cook out for her. I remember one time we went to a park, as a matter of fact, and did a cookout. We've cooked out here at home probably more so the last several years. And so I don't know if your family's taking you out, if your father, if your family's taking you out. I'm not sure what my family is doing for me. I know in various years, like a couple of years ago, you know, we live in a rural part of the Raleigh area. There's like a river that is not very far from us where they have like canoeing and all of those kind of good things. So on Father's Day, and it was something that had been around and we hadn't known about it for like the 10 years we had lived, like, I don't know, 3 miles from this place, 4 miles maybe, had no idea about it. But they did that for me one year. There was a truck rodeo in Durham one year that my family took me out for Father's Day. So whatever it is you're doing. But not only should we as fathers enjoy, because typically as fathers, regardless of what the situation is, it doesn't have to be a special occasion, generally speaking, we're going to come out of pocket to pay for whatever that is, whether it's dinner or some kind of food, whether it's entertainment, movies, whatever it is. Generally speaking, not all the time, generally speaking, we're going to come out of pocket, right? So, you know, I've been thinking about this as I kind of go around. And listen, I'm one that tips. I'm definitely going to tip. I don't even know what the going rate is regarding tipping. What is the going rate? I knew it one time, you know, probably like 20 years ago, it's like, or more maybe, it's like 15%. Then it went up to 18%. Now maybe it's around 20%. I'm not sure what it is. And generally speaking, I tip somewhere between, just on general principle, somewhere between 18 and 20%. Again, that's just on general principle. If the, you know, the service was phenomenal, if it was outstanding, then I'm gonna tip a little bit more. I'm going to tell you what perturbs me, right? And I went to a, I'm not going to mention the place, but it was like a, I'll just say it was a sandwich shop, right? A well-known sandwich shop. They ask for a tip. Like, I've never seen a place that is well-known, a national place that is not serving you. In other words, it's not, I mean, I get it. You've got someone that's preparing your food or making whatever it is. But look, even at burger places, even at chicken places, that happens and they're not asking for a tip. But this particular place was asking for a tip. Needless to say, I didn't leave a tip. I'm not leaving a tip for service that is supposed to be provided anyway at what is in essence a fast food place. Okay, don't leave tips at a fast food place. I've worked in the fast food industry when I was young. I never got a tip. I never expected to get a tip, right? So that was very surprising. But seems like today we're in a tip culture. Everybody wants a tip, no matter where you go. Now, I'm going to tip for good service. Let me give you an example. Let's say I order a pizza. If I'm coming to pick up my pizza, you're not delivering my pizza to me, okay? If I'm coming to pick up my pizza, in other words, if it's carryout, and I use pizza as an example, but whatever food it is, if I'm not using one of these services that deliver your food, I am not going to tip if I am taking my time to come and pick up my food, taking my gas in essence to do so, I'm not providing a tip. That's just how I'm rolling. Now, if I'm having my food delivered to me, then definitely I'm going to tip, because my understanding is a lot of times these drivers, that's how they get paid. Like these places that do this, they charge you a service fee. But that service fee does not go to the driver, from my understanding. Now, if I'm wrong about that, somebody let me know. But if that's the case, that's terrible. You're going to charge me a service fee, and you're not going to give part of that service fee to the person that is bringing the food? Absolutely unbelievable. Look, I've run out of time. This is something we're going to talk about. It's the summertime. We're relaxed a little bit. We'll talk about this a little bit more in subsequent weeks here on Box to Row. Look, my time is about up. I thank you for yours. Thank you to my father, Donald Ware, for joining us today here on Box to Row. Again, save the date. Countdown to kickoff, Saturday, July 20th, right here in the Raleigh-Durham area. Next week, we will announce the place where we're going to have the event. Had a great time. It's the 7th countdown to kickoff. 7 of the coaches from the HBCUs will be part of this radio style interview, and we want you to come out. You can log on for more information at BoxToRow.com. And always remember to support those that support Yo, Box to Row is produced by DW Communications. I never forgot what I was told. It was the best advice that I ever had. It came from a wise and dead old dad. He said, sit down, punk, I want to talk to you. And don't say a word until I'm through. Now there's a time to laugh, a time to cry, a time to live, and a time to die. A time
time to break and a time to chill, to act civilized or act real ill. But whatever you do in your lifetime, you never let an MC steal your rhyme. So from 6 to 6 to this...